It's the Podmatic Podcast for April 29th, 2015. Shall I compare thee to the dulcet tones of... Who's that guy from NPR that's coming to the library?
Steve Inskeep.
Steve Inskeep. This is the Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I am Brian, and joining me in the booth today is...
Amanda.
Jeremy.
Mike.
Bill.
April is Poetry Month, and you know if I'm doing bad, crappy parodies of Shakespeare, we must be talking about poetry.
Okay,
I guess.
What yonder window breaks? Poetry Month.
There you go. So we're going to talk about our favorite poetry-related stuff today that you can get from the library. I know that a lot of families in Nashville are really busy with all the poetry-related events that they've been...
We've been slammed.
That they've been going to... I know there's a long holds list on all the poetry books.
Oh, yeah.
It's like I know that you want to get your favorites, and they're not here. Yeah. So.
It's like...
Yeah, wow. I had to wait super long for this book, all 3 days.
It's the one time a year that all the poetry books are on the Lucky Day shelf, you know?
Yep. Good luck finding Louise Gluck.
Amanda.
Yes, Brian. Is it poetry time?
It's poetry time all the time in my world.
Wow.
It's not in my world, but I'm going to talk about Dorothy Parker today, and I was actually first exposed to her through the TV show The Gilmore Girls because founder... writer Amy Sherman Palladino, she actually named her production company Dorothy Parker Drank Here. And I'm also pretty sure that Rory read Dorothy Parker, like she had the Dorothy Parker Companion at some point. And I know that somebody quotes from her poem Coda, although I don't really remember who or when this happens in the show. I just know it happens. But
you're not a true fan!
I know! Oh. Well, I recognized the poem when I read it. I was like, oh, that was in the show. I don't remember where. But either way, I have wanted to read her for a long time because... I've idolized, I love the Gilmore Girls. And so if I idolize something someone else idolizes, then they have to be cool too, right? So Dorothy Parker was born in New Jersey in 1893, and she sold her first poem to Vanity Fair in 1914. But then she really started, her career took off as she was writing theater criticism for Vanity Fair when she took over for the vacationing P.G. Wodehouse. So that was when she started to really hit the big time. At the magazine, she met Robert Benchley and Robert E. Sherwood, and the three of them started the Algonquin Roundtable because every day they would eat lunch at the Algonquin Hotel, and that has since been made like a national, I don't say monument, I don't know, it's like a protected, because everybody would go there to eat and became really popular. But unfortunately, Parker's known for her like caustic wit, and she's very... snarky in her writing. And eventually Vanity Fair got sick of it and fired her. And then her boys Robert resigned in protest with her. And so she kind of wrote some short stories, kind of moved out to Hollywood, wrote for movies for a time in the 30s and 40s. She put together three poetry volumes. One was called Enough Rope, one was called Sunset Gun, and the other was called Death and Taxes and Other Poems. Most of the copies we have here are compendiums of her entire poetry works. And we do have it on an overdrive form, an ebook, as well as book form. I kind of feel like she was more modern, like a more modern Emily Dickinson. She writes a lot about love, a lot about death. She had a very turbulent love life. She had some issues with suicide. as all good poets do. Uh-huh. Her poetry was very much of the times, writing as a woman in the 20s, she had women's issues and...
Whoa.
You mean she got her period?
Yeah. There's women's issues that are specific to the 20s.
Yeah. Well,
my flapper skirt is just too low.
But she didn't want to be like the little Miss Homemaker. Like she was more, flapper, rowdy, go out and party, get drunk.
We just mansplained her about women's
issues. You did, as if I didn't know.
I'm waiting for her to pull out a mace and just like. Crush all of our skulls.
Because women carry mace, because we have to protect ourselves.
No, I'm sorry. I've been
mansplaining.
I'm sorry, okay.
Medieval weapon. Yes. The ball.
I'm sorry. I'm always a D&D nerd mode, right? I bet, yes. I made a medieval weapon like a spiked ball at the end of a chain.
I'm going to man in my own little corner now.
So anyway, so I wanted to read to you, just to give you an example of her writing style, I wanted to read you a poem that she wrote called Frustration. If I had a shiny gun, I could have a world of fun, spreading bullets through the brains of the folks who give me pains. Or had I some poison gas, I could make the moments pass, bumping off a number of people whom I do not love. Also, notice there whom instead of who. Very smart. But I have no lethal weapon. Thus does fate our pleasure step on. So they still are quite quick and well who should be by rights in hell. So
I suddenly went from I don't care about Dorothy Parker to I need to look at.
I know, right? So you add about 80.
This is my kind of stuff.
You know, you add about 80 years, you drop a beat underneath that, and we start our next East Coast, West Coast feud. You know, I don't know who she was writing about, but, you know, you crazy offenders, you know who you are. So I really liked Parker's poetry. A lot of hers start off as, oh, moon in June and rain in Spain, and then she blows it up somehow. So it's a very, you always have to make it all the way through to the end. Laughed out loud several times. I enjoyed Dorothy Parker. She did the Gilmore Girls proud, or maybe the other way around.
A few years ago, we did this project for Poetry Month here at the library, and you read a Billy Collins poem that was also about shooting things.
Did I?
Yes.
Oh.
So apparently it's my theme. I have some buried anger somewhere.
The video of this is on YouTube. I believe it's
Was that the Beethoven one with the dog?
I think it's
the dog barks and he wants to shoot.
Charles Grodin.
David Cody's in that movie.
I think there's the name of the poem is Why I Don't Own a Gun.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, you're
right.
And
it's actually, of all the little videos we made for Poetry Month that year, yours with that poem was by far the most popular with over 1,000 hits, which is pretty good for poetry videos. Made by a public library, right?
Rocking
It's two strikes against it.
Go NRA.
There's a Mr. T Experience song that is, the lyrics are by Dorothy Parker. It's like they took a poem and...
She gets rowdy.
It's good.
Jeremy, that's a good segue.
Yeah. I'm not going to talk about that. So I think last week I talked about my complicated relationship with musicals. And I think poetry, I've had a similar thing where it's like I don't read it and I tend to not think about it much. But there is some stuff that I read on occasion and I have definitely enjoyed. And the poetry that's always spoken to me is sort of simple stuff, especially when I was in school, like really simple stuff. And then like we talk about it in class and that was sort of like all this like sort of cosmic significance came out of it through explication in the classroom. And specifically, I was thinking of William Carlos Williams, The Red Wheelbarrow, which is just so much depends upon a red wheelbarrow glazed with rain water beside the white chickens. Now, we read this poem when I was in college, and our professor used it sort of as an example of William Carlos Williams' line, no ideas but in things, in action. So whenever we wrote a poem in our class, like a guy was writing about D&D campaigns, his poems were all about role-playing games. So if there were no ideas in those things, then she said, you know, make it better. And so she repeated that mantra to us. So the things in this line can be anything, and that's why I like what poet Laurie Sheck did in her book, A Monster's Notes. She took one of the most famous things in the world and made a book out of it. This is Frankenstein's Monster. So this is kind of a novel by a poet, but it also doesn't really quite settle on either form. It's sort of a little bit of both. And she explores the story of Frankenstein both as a creation of Mary Shelley and as an actual living monster. It's definitely not a straight ahead story. I mean, obviously you can sit down and read it straight through, but I almost like it more just kind of sitting and pulling stuff out of it at random. And it kind of becomes its own story in that way, sort of with you sort of applying what you already know of the Frankenstein story to what you're finding in the book. And it sort of plays with the idea of notes in the title. There are letters and fragments of letters, but then also sort of stray observations just written basically as lists. And she has stray observations on things like the earth seen from space, time and loneliness, and the usual stuff that poetry is made of. Fact and fiction are blurred in the book with characters from the novel appearing alongside real people. And there's kind of something of Philip Jose Farmer's Wold Newton family concept here. You know what I'm talking about. So I didn't know that there was a name for it, and then I found the name. This is an idea that Philip Jose Farmer, famous science fiction author, had. There's this meteor that fell on a farm in Yorkshire in 1795, and this is sort of a superhero origin story for a lot of popular fiction characters like Sherlock Holmes, Tarzan, Doc Savage, and tons of others. And their descendants were exposed to the radiation from this meteor.
Yeah, the idea is that they're all related. Yeah. So, like, you know, Fu Manchu is like Sherlock Holmes' second cousin.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I read a book once of it that was basically family trees. And after a while, I kind of got kind of bored.
Yeah,
but at first, I was like, that was kind of neat, you know. Doc Savage is related to Tarzan, you know.
And then it's a very cool concept. So in this book, Mary Shelley is visited by this monster, and then it sort of unfolds from there. But I really like this idea of when authors take sort of existing stories and change them to their own, bend them to their own needs. I guess like Wicked is an example of that. It's not poetry, but this is a very unique take on that concept. Sheck is also the author of the poetry collections Black Series and Captivity, both of which are available at your public library. Mike?
I'm about to go on a Jeremy Stahl rant here.
So oh,
like, you know,
do it!
Take up forever. So remember a few weeks ago when I mentioned that fellow cataloger Susan and I like to make fun of certain genres that we see a million times? Well, modern poetry is definitely one of them. Since, you know, they issue titles, rhyme, structure, flowery language, or anything interesting happening in them, they tend to either be the most...
Snob card!
Oh, yes.
Wait a second.
I'm throwing the entire deck down.
Editor's note. I'm a little confused here whether Jeremy is throwing his own snob card or accusing Mike of being snobby. Regardless.
Pardon me, would you have any gray poupon?
I think that flowery language and structure is not interesting.
Oh.
I think that
writing... You mean like, you know, seeing something that's familiar that like could be interesting is not
I
cool?
I think that so much depends upon a red wheelbarrow glazed with rainwater beside the white chickens.
Wow, you can see my eyes glazing over in boredom when I hear that. they tend to be either the most banal of banality, either tying an incredibly minor personal incident into something profound, the grapefruit juice that's squirted into my eye at breakfast
that
this
is a
morning.
Direct attack on
is just like 9/11.
It's just like 9/11. Wow.
Or just relating something.
It's a metaphor.
Or just relating incredibly minor personal incidents that, you know, without anything else. Like I'm really interested in a weirdly written diary entry detailing when an adjunct literature professor in Saskatchewan bought at Starbucks one Friday morning last summer. You don't have to see these. We're weeks on end.
That's
going,
true.
Hey, you know, I had lunch today. It was great.
I will say, though,
you expect me to spend money on this?
They often have the best titles. Like, the weirdest titles that I see come through, you're like, what the heck? And then you're like, oh, it's poetry.
Yeah.
I mean, like, yeah.
Alien versus Predator.
Very poetic, that one.
I can't remember the name of that.
Alien versus Predator versus Jason. I'd watch that. So I was all ready to sneer at today's recommendation when I saw it last year. Except a few things caught my jaded eye. For one, the illustration on the back. Reminded me a lot.
That was him turning the book over to play-by-play for the whole
audio visual, you know.
That looks like first edition Monster Manual drawing.
You know, that Beyonder, or that Beholder, is it different in your eye? Anyway.
Beyonce, what?
Oh, Beyonce. Whoa. How do you take down a Beyonce? You use the other two Destiny children plus two. Destiny Child plus two?
Where does Solange fit into all of this?
Ooh, yeah.
Secret weapon.
Jay-Z plus one.
Now I'm having a fantasy about writing a D&D campaign where, like, instead of, like, traditional villains, they're, like, pop stars. So Beyonce is, like, the evil, you know, maybe she... Well,
she'd
maybe,
be, like, the super ice queen.
Well, people tend to like her, so she can be the good witch, and Azealia Banks can be the bad witch. Or Nikki, or, like...
Kanye could be, like, the dark wizard.
Yeah, exactly.
He could be the court jester.
Yeah.
For one, the illustration in the back reminded me of the English illustrator Aubrey Beardsley, who I quite like, who will probably pop on in a future episode. Secondly, while the book states that the author assembled all the poetry upon learning that he had cancer and going through treatments, and he made it out okay, but then by the time the book got to me, he had died.
Wah-wah.
Which was like, you know, I was like, wow, that sucks. And I looked inside and was like, I actually liked what I found. Oh boy. The book is called Love of a Kind by Felix Dennis. I think I'll read a short passage. Crack open my book.
I
know, right? I was trying to find one that, you know, didn't have grapefruit or...
Please note that Mike chose a poetry book with pictures in it.
Yeah, that's right.
Pop on pop.
I've got my glass. Dr. Seuss. He's coming out with a new book in June. Oh, keep, right. keep it, you know, enjoy
from
listeners.
Beyond the Grave.
Let's see. It's called Keep Your Soul in a Suitcase. Words whispered close to my pregnant friend's belly. Keep your soul in a suitcase, neatly pressed. An inn is not a residence, you know. Don't kick like that. You're not a paying guest. Besides, there's nowhere else for you to go. No use protesting. Life is all a jest. Don't make yourself unwelcome and a pest. The landlord's heard it all before, my friend. You'll have your chance to get it off your chest. If room rates seem excessive, just pretend. Enjoy your stay and get some yourself some rest.
Wow.
See?
You know, Maddie like Stepanek would be really proud.
Of course, I'm sure your Starbucks-loving professors that Jeremy likes.
Starbucks? Well,
I've actually seen the grapefruit thing is a true thing that I actually read once before I dropped the book in disgust.
I tried to write a poem that was about 9/11 that was a very similar thing, but I won't repeat it.
Your wife probably punched you when you were dead.
Oh, so she didn't know me.
Cookie, but the absence of cookie butter is much less like Abu Ghraib.
That's true.
Bill, can you heal the rift between these two?
I'll try.
Can you heal the rift between these two poetry connoisseurs? Okay, sure.
I'm not even a poetry connoisseur.
I was going to talk about who Felix Dennis was, but, you know, whatever.
Who was he?
He was a British publishing magnate who's most famous for founding Maxim.
Ah, wow.
And
after
selling the U.S. edition of Maxim to another company for $250
billion.
Million.
A million, okay.
So he spent the last 14 years of his life as a poet.
Because he had $200 million.
Yeah, that's right.
William Carlos Williams was a simple country doctor.
He failed. Take that back to the USA trilogy. What have we got, Bill?
Okay.
This is so much more fun than I thought it was going to be.
I know.
This is a surprisingly hostile episode. Like, who knew?
That was good.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, sorry.
One night I thirsted like a prince, then like a king, then like an empire. Like a world on fire, I rose and flowed away and fell. Once more to sleep. In an hour, I was back. Well, never has diabetes been so beautifully described. The name of the poem is Diabetes, and it's by Poet Laureate James Dickey. You can read the rest of the poem in the collection called The Eye Beaters, Blood, Victory, Madness, Buckhead, and Mercy. Also, the Downtown Public Library, you can check out the James Dickey Reader. Of course, James Dickey is probably best known for the novel Deliverance, which was made into a feature film. We still have the book, but so sadly no longer the movie. James Dickey always fascinated me because he could really write beautiful poetry, but he had this macho demeanor. For example, Burt Reynolds, who starred in Deliverance, stated about James Dickey, "If you didn't drive a pickup truck and have a gun rack in the back, you were considered a homosexual." Which brings me to my James Dickey story.
Speaking of homosexuals.
He came to the public library. Now, I wasn't around at this time. This is a story Lou Hicks told me. And WPLN used to be in the back of the popular materials at the time. It was audiovisual. And so he came in to do an interview, and this was a coup because this was 1973, and this was about the time Deliverance was out, so it was a hot interview for them to have. So first of all, Lou said when he came in the door of audiovisual, he was just tall. He was 6'5", and said he was just like big, everything, broad shoulders, big head, the whole thing. And he showed up in this beautiful snakeskin jacket. This is an important part of the story. And it was 9 a.m. in the morning, and he was prompt. He was on time. He was also drunk. So they go in to do the interview, and said the guy who, I don't know the guy's name, said, "Well, Mr. Dickey, let me take your jacket, and I'll put it over here on the coat rack." And he said, "Oh, you don't need to do that," and yanks it off, wads it up, and throws it in the corner, just macho dog style. So the interview did well. He was a functioning drunk. He could, he did the interview, except this one moment saying, the interview asked him, "Why did you," and fortunately this interview wasn't live. So we said, how do you come to get your inspiration to write such beautiful prose? About that time he let out this big gnarly burp. So, and Lou heard this. Lou heard it, said, you got to listen to this. And, of course, when he asked about his experiences writing in Hollywood, of course, he had to put it down by saying, oh, it's a bunch of BS and all this stuff. But even though he did, because of his, he had the freedom to write his poetry and stuff because of the success of that movie and book. Also, just to polish off, if you want to read an excellent biography called Summer of Deliverance, A Memoir of My Father and Son, it's by Christopher Dickey. We still have that in the collection. And he was old enough at the time that he remembered a lot of the filming of Deliverance, and it was just being around with his father. So it's an excellent biography.
Yeah. Do you think that is that interview somewhere? Do you think we can find it?
I don't know.
I can. I'll see what I can do. Let's just see if we can find it. I mean, not to shift gears, I thought maybe James Dickey would be maybe a nice medium between, you know, Jeremy's idea of poetry and Mike's idea of poetry. Maybe that worked out okay. I do think it's weird that Mike is somehow emerging as my nemesis on this podcast.
I thought it might be me.
Oh, I don't. We've talked about the diagram of, you know, what we find interesting is reversed.
Oh yeah.
So, like, you know,
we talked about that too.
Yeah.
But he told he told me he thought the first teaser for the Star Wars trailer was really good. Looked really cool.
It did surprise me.
Really cool.
No, I have
really
actually,
cool.
I have actually said these words to Jeremy. If you're into it, I'm out of it. So.
I said how much I like the Michael Keaton, the first Michael Keaton Batman movie. He goes, that movie doesn't exist in my world.
Yeah, I think that my
Fighting
equivalent
words.
Of Mike's Rocky Horror.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome.
Okay. So I got nothing against modern poetry. So the poet that wrote Alien vs. Predator, his name is Michael Robbins. That made a bigger splash than any other contemporary poet in recent memory. We don't have that book. We have his second book, The Second Sex. I have a feeling it probably doesn't have a holds list. Maybe it will after this episode. Now, Michael Robbins was a big deal in the poetry world, you know, with Alien vs. Predator, until Patricia Loughlin wrote Motherland, Fatherland, Homeland Sexuals, and then that really took off. But those are like two like really like more well-known contemporary poets, and we have their books at the library. I want to talk about something a little different. I usually don't get personal on the podcast, but I will today. In my adult life, I've made it a goal to like read poetry every day, and I have failed miserably.
Yeah, good luck.
I was like, wow, that's impressive.
Now the one time in recent years that I have actually pulled this off was this short period when, like, my partner was unemployed, and I would get her to braid my hair in the morning before work, and then she was stuck. She couldn't move, and then I could read poetry aloud, and there's nothing she could do about it.
Oh,
she
so
couldn't
romantic.
Run away, and it forced me to do it, too, because I needed something to do
that's
while she was doing my hair. So, right.
I love it.
This is amazing.
So,
this went from an episode I was dreading to an episode I'm loving.
So for that time period, the book that we read together was The Illuminations by Arthur Rimbaud, translated by John Ashbery. So, like, prose poems by a French drunk lunatic, translated by an American drunk lunatic. John Ashbery, whose poems we once used as comedic fodder
on a Poetry
Month episode. And normally I would say, hey, poetry in translation is kind of like kissing a tree. It doesn't really make any sense.
Yeah.
But
I think dendrophiliacs would disagree.
but if the translator is John Ashbery, I'm assuming that it's all right. I love that book. I pulled this nugget from that book. My wisdom is as spurned as chaos. What is my nothingness compared to the amazement that awaits you? Now, usually I always think of that in terms of like terrorism now. I can't help but to think of like people who are like suicide terrorists would be like, my wisdom is spurned as chaos. What is my nothingness compared to the amazement that awaits you? Like when that grapefruit hits you in the eye. But
bringing it back.
But now I realize I realize that's how Mike's gonna feel when he watches Rocky Horror again.
Hey.
So I can't let it go. I'll let it go.
Poem. Look at the structure.
So we did get to read that, and it was really, really good. Now, I still grab the new poetry books that Mike is forced to catalog off the shelf, and sometimes I read them, and sometimes they just sit until I get billed for them and have to return them to the library. So the one that I picked up recently, it was called Cinema of the Present by Lisa Robinson, I just picked it up. You know, it's like, oh, I don't know who, you know, let's go. Of course, I pick it up. I look on the flap and like, oh, she's like the most famous poet in the world. And it's like, has published books for years and has lived in every cool city in the universe. And okay. So I start and it's just, it's single spaces, like single lines, double spaced. And there's one line and the next line is in italics. And there's one line and the next line is in italics. And I'm like, okay. And then some of the lines are the same, like they repeat. And I'm like, okay, I get it, what you're going for here. But then I just keep reading, and it totally blew my mind. It made me fall in love with words again, made me fall in love with poetry. It was just so great and amazing. And I didn't finish it, and I have a good excuse. And my excuse is, but I'm going to unnecessarily censor those words. People can just imagine what my excuse is.
Okay. Right? Well, we'll give you a hand with that one.
Okay. So, but... The one really, the three of the lines that I grabbed, you know, that were in a row that I just love is, what if your only witness were an animal against which you perceive a joyous unfounding? I'm in debt to your radiant obscenity. Rocky Horror is a great movie, Mike. And
you will be in debt to its radiant obscenity.
Exactly. But actually, I love those three lines so much. I actually use those three lines for an art project we do here for Poetry Month at the library. So what I think it's about is her remembering a relationship and their things that they've said to one another. And I don't think the regular font and italicized font lines are like a dialogue between two people, but I think that the idea is that it's like a film going by because the art on the cover is like a film strip. It creates like the sort of like flicker effect of like a film strip between film frames. But besides this, it being like the best poetry I've read in forever, that's very articulate. If having a really good book experience, it's a little chat book, but it's on amazing paper. Like just the touching it is like just so great. And I think undeniably that is your ideal poetry experience. I mean, I guess, you know, people say that poetry is meant to be heard aloud. And I totally get that. But if you're like a redneck coal miner's daughter and like you don't go anywhere to hear poetry aloud, but you grow up reading poetry, I think it's a relationship between you and the page. And like if there's ever an argument that, you know, ebooks suck, it would be with poetry. Though Twitter poetry is amazing. I use Twitter for poetry. It's great. I love what Twitter has done for poetry. I just said that. but it's great. Even though it's this little chat book.
What was that? Like, is he famous for saying Twitter's terrible? Like, so, I'm confused. I need some context here.
I think it's hard. I think it's hard for any person to seriously say Twitter has done good.
Yes, whatever. I just said Twitter's great for
like
poetry.
Career Square, who cares? Okay. It doesn't matter. Okay. It's very difficult.
But, you know, so the paper is amazing. Like in the back, it has everything about the font and the pica size, you know, and you can go to the publisher's website and like buy alternative prints of the cover because they put it out with different covers. Amazing. Cinema of the Present by Lisa Robinson.
I don't think I'm going to say I already played my snap card, but I don't know if you used pica in the right way.
That could be a bring you down card.
My wife is a printer.
Yeah.
And deals in picas, and I don't know if you used that correctly.
So, pica is the distance between the letters.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I guess you're right then.
And
I'm wrong.
And I'm gonna fess up. There's no mention of picas in the back of the book when they talk about the font. But I was just that type of crap.
My wife snob cards me when I say font because I think when we say font,
we mean typeface. Yes.
But I'm just sorry.
I'd just like to throw out that I always think that's a good sign of a good book when you actually read the page about the typeface.
Oh, yeah.
I always get kind of amused by that because they think I care.
I just don't want to stop reading the book, so I'm just reading everything that's back there. And then I come to the end, you're like, oh.
I sort of like the poetry of that. It gives it a more human blah, blah, blah. And
this is invented by a monk in the 17th century.
Yeah, that's nice. I'm much more interested in that stuff than I ever thought I would be just because of my
poetry itself.
Yeah. Well, no, just because of my
because your wife's profession.
Yeah, because of my proximity to that world.
Even novels
try not to go against type.
Even novels that I read for plot, those books are ruined if I'm reading an electronic copy and when I get to the end, an ad for the next book in the series pops up.
Oh, that drives me nuts. Do you want to rate this on Amazon?
I want to take my phone and throw it on the ground and just stomp on it.
I can't believe you can read on a phone.
Thank you.
Yeah, I can't read on a phone.
Thank you, Google Books, for ruining books for me. Now, luckily, library still has these awesome poetry books, like Cinema of the Present. The reason
we get a ton of contemporary poetry because of like a grant.
Because I noticed that's why. And you know, my love of modern poetry also fuels my love of modern opera. I just had to kind of put that in there. Zing.
For those of you following Home Alone, Google wrecked ebooks, but Twitter say poetry.
That's a good one.
Well done.
I said Idle Delilah was the title track of Azealia Banks' Broke with Expensive Taste. Well, obviously, it's not the title track, right? Duh.
Durr.
Amanda, did you have corrections?
I had corrections because apparently cold medicine and podcasting don't mix. So I said Lip Sync Battle was John Krakowski. His name is John Krasinski, not Jane Krakowski.
That's why I was wondering who that was.
I was
more appalled at the idea of Lip Sync Battle by that point.
I watched it. It was funny. Yeah. And I also said that in Empire they married Rudy from the Cosby Show. They didn't. They married Olivia.
Olivia.
From the
Raven Simone?
Raven Simone. Oh. Yes. I got my Ron Cosby daughter.
Wow.
Ironically, I thought it was. What didn't Raven Simone play Rudy though?
No.
Keisha Knight Pulliam played Rudy.
Yeah. Oh.
And she's also not a Cosby daughter. She was she was the daughter of.
Yeah, she was
the
Denise's stepdaughter.
Denise. Yeah.
So. Well, even though you got the name wrong, I knew the actress.
Yeah. Okay.
That's so Raven of you to do.
I know, right?
All right.
Nevermore, guys.
Always a good chance.
The show with Matt Dillon and Terrence Howard is called Wayward Pines.
All right.
Which some people say is basically like a Twin Peaks filler, like a Twin Peaks replacement, since there's like this Twin Peaks buzz and who knows if it's going to happen or not.
Also, the name seems like it's a word association.
Trees.
Yeah. Trees. Craziness.
Which I've censored myself from talking about on the podcast anymore that I already have.
There's a new show coming on called Zany Cedars, too.
Ooh.
Is this true or is this a Jeremy story?
Is it by Alejandro Jodorowsky?
Yeah. I'm pitching it to the network next week.
Double Maple, directed by John Waters.
Double Maple. Oh, you got the Double Maple.
Double Maple, ooh, directed by John Waters.
Wow.
That's the dirtiest thing I've heard ever.
I like the Lincoln Log Lab.
I have that unwritten script in my drawer. Mike had talked about the Canon podcast and how they debated whether the Rocky Horror Picture Show should be or shouldn't be included in the canon. Well, that's an error because it already is part of the canon.
Oh.
So I did, you know, in my emotional hysteria about the fact that Mike doesn't like Rocky Horror.
Still don't.
I said that all the Star Treks were bad. I was
wondering if you would backpedal on that.
Star Trek Next Generation and Deep Space Nine are good shows. I don't have any kids. If I had kids, I would watch Star Trek Next Generation with them. The thing I would say about original series, the next time you watch original series, imagine Captain Kirk is Don Draper. Watch a few episodes like that, and then tell me what you think about Star Trek.
Well, all right.
And I would request to, like, watch Rocky. Have you watched Rocky Horror as an adult?
I haven't watched it since, you know, 1991, so no.
Okay.
Oh, man.
Watch it as an adult, because when I was editing the show together, I was like, how in the world does he like Little Shop of Horrors and not like Rocky Horror? Because basically, Rocky Horror is an X-rated sci-fi version of Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah. Minus plants.
Yeah. Like, instead of, you know, of like a killer plant, there's a transvestite Frankenstein. Right? So it's like, okay, but anyway. Yeah. I totally get if you don't like that movie. It's not for everyone. I think I'm done editorializing like a terrible, tyrannical monster that I am.
It's like really making you think kind of terrifying.
Oh, why?
For more information about tyrannical monsters and transvestite Frankensteins, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
And our theme music is by
Adam Dean.
Next week,
Family Saga.
Family Sagas.
Yeah.
Bob Saget?
Yeah. Yeah.
Good old time at the family.
Oh, whatever happened? The, man, TGIF theme songs?
Yeah.
That is my jam. Those are my favorite songs ever.
We'll lose you for almost, hours, won't we?
I almost got, like, the Perfect Strangers theme stuck in my head for, like, you know, like an hour or two.
Did you ever see that video game that was, like, it was, like, Balky was running. And
Siri, there was a Perfect Stranger.
It was, like, the lyrics were coming at you. Yeah, look it up. It's, it was basically just, like,
I
running and jumping.
Wow, an endless runner with Perfect Strangers.
Yeah.
I watched that as an adult. You know, Cousin Larry, such a jerk.
Huge jerk. Wow. Larry Appleton.
Appleton.
A jerk.
You Branson know, Pinoche is an e-book, I mean, audiobook reader now.
What did you just call him?
What's his name?
Branson Pinoche.
I don't know, yeah.
Branson Pinoche.
Okay.
Branson Pinoche.
I guess I should have, like, I apologize Branson for not Pinoche. Watching more episodes,
Correction!
I apologize.
Is that a snap card?
I apologize for not watching more episodes of Bosom Buddies. Oh, wait, that wasn't even the name of the show. Snob Card.
Oh.
Pardon me, would you have any gray poupon?
Yeah, they didn't dress in
drag. Yeah, they didn't wear dresses. They were Perfect Strangers.
I watched Dharma and Greg when it was on.
I love it.
Twitter name's like Sinskeep, which is cool. Sounds like a D&D dungeon.
Sinskeep.
You've entered the bloody stones of the Sinskeep. You see an orc. You attack it with your axe +2.
He's a lawful good journalist.
Cleric. Julian Assange, chaotic neutral for sure. I love it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You want me to?
Yeah, okay.
So, post-correction.
You know, the thing.
I wish that face could translate.
I know, right? We could take a picture of this.
The thing about, and we're so behind schedule, the thing about the twerpy gamer kid, you know, doing +5 damage, it really depends whether or not it was a Vorpal sword.
Oh, sure. I know. Tell me about it.
I once did one of those lament things for, like, my actual, like, outlook on life. Apparently, I'm lawful neutral.
That day when he came into the airport, they sent two young women to go pick him up.
Uh-huh.
And he was so drunk when he got off the plane, he put his arms around both of them, looked at them both, and said, "Who wants to f*** a poet?"
We gotta tell that all the time.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Those were different times.
Yeah.
That's the story that I heard.
It's a good one.